as we hired on people, we had a hard time understanding why sometimes when you have the perfect resume, the perfect LinkedIn background, the perfect experience for the job that we were hiring, why would some people work out and some people not work out? And really dug in to examine that and realize that we actually had a culture that we were not articulating, and that by defining and then working hard to make sure we were true to our culture, we might be able to hire people who would be successful and who would add on. And really, that's where we started.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Brand, and I am excited that you are here, glad that you've joined us, whether it's your first time or you've listened to all the episodes. I'm coming up on 3 years hosting this podcast, creating it and hosting it over a little over 3 years ago this month. So glad that you have been joining me on this journey. It has been fun for sure. There's been an evolution from the beginning when it started out as Authentic Energy was the name of the podcast, and then a shift about halfway in, maybe a year in, where I switched it to the Culture Coach Podcast. And funny enough, I am now moving kind of in a more of an aligned, bringing those two together, because I believe, and as you'll hear my guest today talk about, just how important it is for you as the leader to get clear in what you want, what your purpose is, what your values are, what's important to you as you lead your organization or your department or your team. You have to get clear first. And that's one of the things that the Authentic Energy podcast talked about, was being true to yourself, figuring out what it is that you want, who you are, and then creating boundaries to protect your energy so that you can be your authentic self. Now, we're not here to talk about that today. We are here to talk about the Culture Coach. We are here to talk about culture. And so today's conversation is such a strong example of what we've been talking about over the last 18 months on this podcast. I'm joined today by Sabrina Parsons. She's the CEO of Palo Alto Software. She's been leading the organization since 2007 and has guided it through major transformation, including the shift from installed software, if you know, you know, to SaaS, all while intentionally shaping a culture rooted in autonomy, transparency, data-driven decision-making, and deep commitment to mission. What I love about this conversation is that it's not theoretical. Sabrina walks us through the real inflection points, the step-by-step, the real live stories, the hiring misses, the culture clarifications, the operational changes that helped them articulate who they are and who they are not. So if you've ever wondered why some perfect resumes don't work out, how to tie culture to strategy and profitability, or how to build autonomy without losing accountability, this episode will give you practical insight and honest reflection from a leader who has lived it. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I'm so excited to have my guest, Sabrina Parsons, with me. Sabrina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to learn. I'm obviously excited to talk about culture, excited to learn more about your organization. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about Palo Alto Software?
Yeah. So I have been the CEO of Palo Alto since 2007. It is a software as a service company. It's headquartered in Eugene, Oregon. We have about, what is it now? There's some contractors, but around 70 employees. And it is a company that has a mission to help people succeed in business, which is one of the things I love about running the business, because I have a lot of entrepreneurship in my background. My dad's an entrepreneur. I was involved in some SiliconValley.com startups in the late 90s when everything was exploding. And it's just always been something that excites me and just kind of keeps me going, which, you know, I think is important wherever you're working. And, you know, when we're talking about culture, we'll get into it more. But I think having a passion and a mission for me is really important, so that I feel like what I'm doing makes a difference. You know, even though it is a for-profit company and we want to be successful and we want to grow and we want to be profitable and, you know, we want all of that, but I really am driven with the mission of helping entrepreneurs really understand financials and strategy and planning, which isn't also, it's not always very easy for people. It's kind of that part of the business that you know you have to do and you don't always want to do. You want to, you know, make the product or be the baker, or, you know, you want to do stuff that like is what your expertise is. You don't always want to run the business.
Yes. I, as an entrepreneur, I know that. I mean, I have lived that. And I had the privilege of hearing Brené Brown speak about a year ago at one of the local universities here. And one of the things she said was that she defined culture as when you're able to connect the mission of your organization to the work that your people do, to connect those two pieces. And so I love your mission. It's so simple. How have you been able to connect that to the work that people do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've thought a lot about it. I think it's something that I've learned over the years of running a business. I think a lot of people talk about culture and everyone, you know, lots of tech companies have a culture deck and they say all these things about their culture. But I think you're right. It's the culture connected to the mission and the values that has to ring true. Otherwise, you just are walking the walk. And I think it happens too often. And it's also one of those things, having been in this position for a long time now, since 07. So, you know, about to be going on 20 years of being the CEO. And people always ask, like, what's the hardest part? Where have you learned the most? And the people management and the culture part is the hardest part. The rest of it, you can learn, you can study, you can work hard. Culture and managing people is hard because every person is different. And so how do you fit people and employees into that culture? I think it was maybe around 2012, 2013, we transitioned our company from a Windows-based software that was, you know, that was on a CD, and you had like, I mean, I know there's not CDs anymore, but back then there were, but it was not SaaS. It was something you installed on your computer, yes. Which obviously most people are like, what? I don't even think my kids have ever seen like where we put a CD into a computer. But just in that transition, we actually ended up having to transition more of our team than we thought, because a lot of people were really stuck in this kind of old way of doing business. And as we hired on people, we had a hard time understanding why sometimes when you have the perfect resume, the perfect LinkedIn background, the perfect experience for the job that we were hiring, why would some people work out and some people not work out? And really dug in to examine that and realize that we actually had a culture that we were not articulating, and that by defining and then working hard to make sure we were true to our culture, we might be able to hire people who would be successful and who would add on And really, that's where we started. And you know, you had talked about how culture and mission and values are really connected. We even started like basic of defining what is culture, right? Because you study culture in history in like middle school and high school, right? Like Mesopotamia and what was the culture? Like we're all exposed to culture, but I think it, the context of what it actually is and how do you actually build it and maintain it gets lost these days. And so you go back to, it is a shared set of beliefs, values, and practices. And we really, truly believe that. And in order to have the culture, you have to tie it to your mission and you have to hire people who believe in the mission.
Yes. So I love that you said, I mean, that you just clearly articulated what it, a little bit of what it feels like to say you have a culture or to say you have mission, vision, core values, but not be living them. You recognized a point where you had to get intentional. And I'm curious, maybe what, if you recall what that trigger was, and then what were, I mean, you said the first thing you started was defining culture.
Yep.
Do you recall what the trigger was that caused you to realize it wasn't alive like you thought it was?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was after, you know, we had to do this transition with the business. So there were people who didn't have the right skill sets.
Right.
Obviously, because it was a different kind of technology when we were doing installed software. And also on the marketing side, it was very different. We used to be software in a box in retail stores. Obviously, that doesn't happen anymore back then. So in that kind of transitioning the workforce, we were maybe at the fifth or sixth person that we had hired who didn't work out, while we had like 10 other people that we had hired that had worked out great. And so that was the turning point of like, what are we doing wrong?
Yeah. Okay.
Why?
Yeah. So you define culture and then you start changing your hiring practices?
Yeah, well, so what we really did is we said, okay, let's really dig into, like, we have a mission, and we knew, we started to see some similarities between the people who hadn't worked out. Quite a few of them really didn't care about the mission and entrepreneurship and small business. They just had the right resume, and they were like, whatever, I just do a job. This is work. And it was like, okay, that doesn't work because we're all really passionate and we need to work with other passionate people. So, okay, that's one. So we started to sort of line up like, what are the commonalities between the people who are not working out? And what does that, how does that clue us in to what is the culture that we actually have and how do we articulate it? So the mission and believing it and being passionate about it was really important. And we hadn't realized that. We were just hiring based on resume and experience. And does it match the job description, but not, are you passionate about this thing that we're trying to do? So that was number one. Then we also examined, in some cases, we heard this thing like multiple times from people who either left or we had to let go. And they said, they would say, there's not enough direction. I don't understand the strategy. But other people we had hired didn't say that. And they were like not only super successful, but in many cases, they actually, we brought them in, they had a job description, and all of a sudden we're like redefining their job because they've taken on things that weren't getting done. They're doing, they have all this initiative, things are happening. And so we took that data point. We said, okay, these, this thing we hear from people who aren't successful, that there's not enough strategy and like they don't understand the direction. What are they really telling us? And that helped us understand that the team we had built and the kind of executive leadership and managers we had, we were terrible micromanagers. We did not micromanage people well. None of us worked that way. Some people are great at that. And you know, I often talk to people about like, understand how you like to work and then find the right corporate structure. Really large companies, they have places for people who want more of those guardrails and want more of that micromanagement. And that works really, really well. And mm-hmm. a larger company with lots of team members relies on that. But that just wasn't who we were when we were trying to grow this company. And at the time, I think we had 30 employees. Now we have 70. So, you know, there was a lot of growth and we were trying to do all these things. And the reality is, those of us sort of in the leadership roles, we worked best with people who were smart, motivated, innovative, and wanted autonomy, and they wanted to be allowed to kind of think through things, and they weren't afraid of that responsibility. And so that was another point of like, okay, we have to find people who aren't uncomfortable with a smaller company that kind of says, hey, here's your thing, go for it. Ask questions, collaborate. You're not on your own, but we want to empower you and enable you to do your thing. And so that piece of it became really important and helped us understand that, like, you have to believe in the mission and you have to be okay with not always knowing the answer, and that you can research it, you can collaborate with people, and you are gonna just have that ability to kind of run your own project.
I love that. And I think, so I experienced as an employee in two different organizations. I was at a tech company that had about 6,000 employees, very flat organization. The CEO was in a cubicle, and then moved to a retail, a fast food retail chain that was very hierarchical, that in order to get to the C-suite, you had to have a badge to badge in, hardwood floors, everybody had a receptionist, like just two very different organizations. And what I learned was I left that second organization. I burned out significantly. There was a lot of internal friction between myself and the values of the organization. But what I realized, and why I do the work that I do today to help organizations create an intentional culture, is because I learned that the culture that was there in that second organization that I left burned out, there were plenty of people that worked there that loved it. So it wasn't that they had a bad culture. It just wasn't a culture that was a fit for me, especially coming from that flatter tech organization where it was just so different. I got used to this different way of working. And so I love that you've called out that you went and you found what were the things that made you, that the types of employees that you wanted to work with. And so then how did you go about attracting those types of employees or hiring those employees?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, we still do it when we hire today. And in order to retain them, we have to make sure that we're really, you know, walking the walk and not just talking the talk. So the first, like the next step and how did we go and get those employees is that we actually articulated our culture. So we took those two things, like we really need you to be passionate about small business and entrepreneurship. And you need to be a person who wants the autonomy and the responsibility that comes with autonomy. So we took those and we said, okay, what are the other things that make Palo Alto Software go? Can we come up with five or six main kind of themes of our culture? And so we did, and we have six of them, and we call them the tenets of our culture. Being a company that transitioned from installed software to SaaS, there was a lot of financial risk in that because we used to sell software and it was a price and we got all the money up front, $199. And you switch to SaaS and now you're getting $20 a month. So there's a cash flow implication there. And so moving from one business model to the other at the same time as moving from one technology to another felt very risky and uncertain. And so we very much leaned into relying on data and using data to understand and to help us test and do A/B tests and understand how to do minimum viable products, and really anywhere that we could use data to make decisions with the understanding that you can get into analysis paralysis. And we don't want that. We want to be able to move quickly. We were a company that really relied on data. So that became, you know, tenet number one. Then we said, okay, we've got the mission. We were passionate about that. We solve for the customer. The customer is important to us. So that was number two. And then we said, we want to share everything with employees that we can, that's legal. Obviously, there's HR things you can't share, right? There's things that are legally you're not going to share, but we want to be as transparent as possible because you can't allow people to be autonomous and sort of say, go for it, if you're not giving them the information. And so the third tenet of our culture was we're transparent. We want to give as much information as possible, and we share financials, how we're doing, all of the key metrics with the entire company, not just with executive leadership, not just with managers, with everybody. And with those three things, we rely on data, we solve for the customer, and we're transparent. It allows us to give the autonomy, and we call it in our culture, we give you the autonomy to be awesome. So you can do your thing. So those three, you know, data, solve for the customer, transparency leads us to allow you to be autonomous and be awesome in that autonomy. And then we want to hire really smart people and people that are smarter than us. And so the fifth tenet of the culture was we're picky about our peers. We want really smart people. And if we're doing the right hiring, we're hiring people that are smarter than we are so that they can go be autonomous and do their stuff. And that was really the five things that were super important. And the last one is because we live in a smaller town, and I'm very passionate about this, and it's become something that people love about Palo Alto Software. We value community, and that doesn't just mean the community of our company. We are very involved in Eugene, Oregon, in our community. We have a grant program and give grants to nonprofits. And we have a strategy for giving grants around the mission of entrepreneurship and tech and supporting economic development. We support a lot of STEM programs, women in STEM, girls in STEM. And then we also, like most people who live in the Northwest and in Oregon, we love being outdoors. And so we also give grants to support preserving, you know, nature preserves. We have a relationship and a partnership with McKinsey River Trust to help make sure that our rivers in our area are taken care of. We have volunteer days. We allow employees every single month, they get a half day on us. It's not PTO, that they can use towards volunteering somewhere in the community. And when we give grants to nonprofits, if an employee is actively volunteering, that is a criteria that will raise that nonprofit in terms of how we score whether we're going to give the grant, so that we again encourage our employees to do it. And that's where we really sort of, those were the six things. And we felt like the community part really kind of bookends that mission about caring about the entrepreneur and really being passionate about that side.
I love that. Those are beautiful. And very, what I love about them is when I work with clients, I try to make sure we don't just pick core values like integrity or, you know, trust, all of those basic words that nobody really knows what they mean until you, you know, but what you've just defined is really clear and probably really clear for your employees. the process that I follow when I am helping someone create an intentional culture is four steps, and it's to clarify. So to get clarity, it's CORE is the acronym, C-O-R-E, clarify, operationalize, reinforce, and then evaluate. And you've mentioned kind of the reinforcement piece, that that was important to you. So I want to hear about that, but also how did y'all bring it to life? How did you operationalize those culture pillars?
Yeah, tenants. We call it the tenants. Okay. So how do we operationalize? What does this mean? So what does it mean to rely on data? So then we started to say, well, what does that mean for our process and our operations? So we test everything. No matter how good we are, we can always get better. You know, that's part of what we do. And that's why we use data, is that we test everything. And that's in every department, no matter what, whether you're a customer service, maybe that means, you know, testing a different way to allow customers to interact in terms of like, how do they cancel their account? And how do they, you know, everything from like, internal tools to campaigns to features. We want to test everything. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, in each one, and I won't go into it because it takes too long, but we basically said, okay, in order to say we rely on data, we have to operationalize. So what does that mean? We test. In testing, we want people to understand that, like, you can test and be scrappy while still being quality, right? So minimum viable product. Bias for action, right? This idea that we told people, ask for forgiveness and not permission. We trust you. Yeah. And so those were the things, is really going into each tenant and saying, how do people then understand like the actions they take that are part of the culture? How does this all work? And defining all of that, even down to like when we talk about we rely on data, telling our team members, we're not a democracy. Mm. This is not a democracy. One person has to be in charge of a project. The project lead has to decide. So not all decisions are going to be popular. So just because, you know, we have a mission, we're passionate, we work together, we still have to run a business and we still have to be able to make decisions and have leadership. And so we wanted to explicitly talk about what that means. So things that you don't always see in culture decks, but it's like, no, we're not a democracy, you know, and as much as I feel like, and we have people who've worked with us for 20 years, 18 years, 15 wow. years, like a long, long time. So there is that sense of really good friendships. I shy away from saying we're a family because we're not. We're right. a company and you're an employee and you have a job and we pay you for it. And I want to respect that, and the employee wants that to be respected, you know, and I act very differently with my family and with yeah. my children. And I didn't want people to confuse that, right? We are a team, but we're not a family. We respect each other as a team. So things like we aren't a democracy, you know, and we're not trying to be. And then along the way, really, you know, helping people understand, well, what does it mean to solve for the customer? Well, for us, we educate. And that's part of what we do. We're not just a tool with some process and we don't care whether you understand it or not. So we went each way along in that, in those tenets to say, well, what does it mean? You know, what does it mean to be transparent? And we actually articulated, what do we share? When do we share it? And I think that was the other key. As we went through each tenet, we had, you know, five or six different things that then expanded on it. So it became more operational. And that way we could also ask employees to hold us accountable if we started to do something that didn't fit mm-hmm. in the culture, to call it out, to say, hey, you guys say you're transparent, you're not sharing this, you know, and then it'd be like, oh my God, you're right. Let's talk about that. Why aren't we sharing it? Is there a privacy or HR reason? Or is it just, we haven't really thought about it. We got to give you access. Yeah. And so that's the other part about making it operational, is empowering but also reminding very consistently employees that we want to hear from them. We want them to call out leadership and managers if actions are not in line with what we outlined.
Awesome. And then you said, you know, in the beginning, you needed to make sure that you guys were walking the walk and talking the talk. Are there any type of rewards and recognition to kind of reinforce the behaviors that you guys do in the organization that reinforces those culture tenets?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everybody understands financially how we're doing. And based on all of that financials and how we're doing, we're pretty transparent about profit sharing and bonuses in terms of like, hey, the more successful all of us are and the more successful you are in your projects, everybody wins. And then you will get a piece of that. And so very much connecting that, you know, ability to let people be strategic and kind of sometimes take a path that we hadn't thought about. And then the rewards in, wow, this is really working. The metrics show that's working. Look, the revenue's coming in and now we're all going to benefit and do some profit sharing and bonuses. And so that's one way to really also emphasize the transparency. And then the other way we reward people is we don't have a ton of policies. One of the things that we tell people and people understand if they're the right culture of fit, we talk about, and this is under the autonomy to be awesome, don't ruin it for the rest of us. We don't want to have a bunch of policies. We don't want to be forced to create them because of poor decisions. And so just think, you know, am I doing the right thing for my team and the company when you make decisions? Like, would I, if I own the business, would I make this decision? Because then we don't have to come up with a ton of policies. And those are the things that I think we do that really kind of emphasize the culture and reward people in that, you know, no, we don't want to have policies. Do your thing. Ask for forgiveness, not permission, but do it within the context of like things like don't ruin it for the rest of us.
That's great. It's all very well connected. It sounds like it's, you have a good cycle here where it's driving those culture tenets are really, they're attached to the strategy and driving the bottom line, that it's all connected. And so it doesn't, I can imagine, because the tech company where I work sounds very familiar, the transparency thing, all of that. And it really helps employees feel connected, their role connected to the purpose of the organization to help create that intentional culture.
Exactly.
So I'm curious if, you know, if you were speaking to other CEOs, maybe founders that are wanting to create an intentional culture in their organization, where would you tell them to start?
Well, I would definitely tell them the first thing is to really step back and examine who they are, right? Why are they there? What is important to them? What is the reason they wake up every day and do what they do? I think that's where it has to start. Mm-hmm. Because then it's something that's real and it's not just this like fluffy culture that we're all going to pretend about, right? Then it's like, then this is true to who you are. And it's a lot easier than every step of the way. Like you mentioned, oh, it feels like it all circles back. And I think it does because it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we really go back to who are we and what do we believe in? You know, down to like SaaS companies, most of them don't send email receipts, right? Mm-hmm. Because they want to just quietly charge you. Like, yeah. You don't get a receipt from Netflix ever.
Right.
Right. And Netflix doesn't care if you're watching or not watching. Right. And that's one of the reasons. And I have friends who are VCs and they're like, you're crazy that you send email receipts. Like, you could reduce your churn by 2 points if you didn't send email receipts. Just boom, immediately. Right. And it's like, well, but that's not who we are.
Yeah.
You know, you could reduce your churn if you made it really hard to cancel, which we've all had those companies like that make it really hard to cancel, right? It's just not who we are. If you aren't ever logging in, like, we're not doing our job, and you're eventually not going to be paying us. And it kind of doesn't, it just feels icky to be like, oh, we benefited because you forgot. So again, I think that's what I would tell someone, a CEO, is like, who are you? What's that line of what you feel good about and don't feel good about? And that has to be where your culture starts.
I love that you started with the individual. I think that's so important, that leader, that founder, to have clarity on what's important to them and the organization they're basically building with those people that are a part of the team. This has been such a good conversation. I can't believe how fast time has flown. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd want to make sure people know about the the team or the company or yourself?
You know, I think maybe just one. I would say the other piece, and that's, it's very personal to me, being a woman in tech and a working mom. I also very much believe in not work-life balance, because I think that's a little bit of BS. Yeah. Like, balance implies the more you work, the more you have to do, right? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Right.
I've always had this approach of integrated life. And when my kids were little, they would come on business trips with me. They come to the office. We have kids in the office on a no school day all the time. We have places where they can go. We retain working moms because, I'm a working mom, so I feel like I can bring that perspective. But, you know, we know there's going to be ebbs and flows, and we know sometimes things get really difficult. And if your kid is sick for a week, and I'm telling you, you have no PTO and you can't take the time off, you're not really working, right? You're worried mm-hmm. about your sick kid. And I'm just forcing you to pretend to work. But if I say, you know what, it's fine, just take the time, and we've hired the right employees, it's going to come back tenfold. They're going to do stuff at 10 o'clock at night because the kid is finally asleep and they've had time to rest and they feel refreshed. They're going to be loyal. They're going to make good decisions. I don't have to force them or have policies about it. So I would say, from a working mom perspective, I very much embrace, if you have smart, motivated women who you hire and they happen to be moms as well, if you can respect that side of it and they feel supported and respected, you're not going to lose them mm-hmm. the way oftentimes we lose working moms. And the company will win in the end.
Yes. From someone who's an empty nester now, like, if someone would have invested in me like that, now I have all this time that, you know, I'm getting to put into my own business now. But, you know, yeah, I love that perspective. And it's so, so important. Well, it has been such a great conversation. And you're like the third person that I've come in contact with in the last couple months from Eugene, Oregon. And so I know that it's such a small town, but I think the universe is trying to tell me I need to make a trip or get out that way.
Yeah. If you're ever out that way, we would love to have you over, show you around. It's a awesome. Really great town.
Awesome. All right, Sabrina, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun. I really appreciate it, Wendy.
What a great episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Such the perfect guest. I mean, everything she said was in perfect alignment with the way that we here on the show talk about how to create an intentional culture. She has lived it. She is living it. And you can too. So if today's episode sparked something for you, if you're realizing that your organization might need more clarity, more operational connection, or more reinforcement around what you say you value, I'd love to support you. You can learn more about my core culture framework and my work with growth-minded leaders at culturecoachwendy.com, or connect with me directly on LinkedIn. I am on there every day checking in. And I always love hearing what's resonated. So let me know. If you found something in this episode valuable, please share it with another leader who is building something meaningful. That's how we elevate the workplace, one intentional culture at a time. Thanks so much for being here, and I'll see you next week.